Broadcasting live from beautiful, historic Marion, Ohio, it's Now with Scott Spears. Call Scott live on the air anytime at 740-383-9944. No topic is too big or too small. I'm your announcer, the man with the golden voice, Ted Williams. And now, here's your host, Scott Spears.
Thank you, man with the golden voice, Ted Williams. Scott Spears coming at you live here on a Thursday morning, May the 14th, 2026. 5:14:26, 12 and a half minutes past the hour. Glad to be with you this morning. 46 degrees here in Marion. Still a little chilly for the middle of the month of May, but we'll take it. And cloudy skies, mostly cloudy skies this morning in the Marion area. Good to be with you. Now, before I went on the air this morning, it was a race between the theme song and the news report and could I get my earphones, which are earbuds, untangled. Somehow, between yesterday morning and this morning, all the wires got tangled up and I was trying to get them out of a knot so I could get them in my ear before the show started, but I'm happy to report that I was able to race the news, a very short news report this morning and a short weather report, and get the earbuds in before we started. Do want to remind everybody, tonight the big Bravo event, if you want to hear some great local talent, goes on 7 to 9 p.m. It's the establishment behind Bucci's there on Center Street. 7 to 9 p.m. tonight, the big Bravo event. You won't want to miss that. Now, we're going to kick off the morning this morning. We talk a lot about city council here and what goes on and what has went on and so forth. Yesterday, I had the chance to tape an interview with the longest tenured person on city council at this point, and the head of the finance committee, Aaron Rollins. So we're going to kick off the morning this morning by playing that interview, and maybe you'll get a little insight into what's going on with council and what's going on with Aaron and where we are at this point. He was the one no vote Monday in regard to the Dollar General Logan Tire land annexation, and we'll learn why that was. So let's kick off the morning this morning with City Councilman at Large, Aaron Rollins. Scott Spears, WGH Talk Radio here with At Large City Councilman Aaron Rollins. Aaron, good to have you in the studio today.
Great to be here. Thanks for having me.
Aaron, Monday night's meeting, we found out that the new 4th Ward City Councilperson, Nathan Stevenson, 29 years old, somebody you voted for, was going to take the helm of the 4th Ward after an absence of a councilperson since February. What did you make of the whole process leading into Nathan's swearing in? And you voted for him. Why did you vote for Nathan?
Yeah, I voted for Nathan. In my conversations, both with him and about him, came to realize that he was a pretty good young man. Enjoyed the fact that he's a little bit younger, so I felt like we could use a little bit of youth on council. I just felt he was the best choice for the position.
How do you think, I mean, nobody's got a crystal ball, but how do you think he will play as time goes along? I mean, it takes a little bit of a learning curve there on council.
Sure. Yeah, there'll be a learning curve. I think he'll adapt well. He seems to be a pretty sharp young man. I don't think he'll have too much of a challenge learning the job, learning the Robert's Rules of Order. I think he should hit the ground running.
There are a couple issues going on with council right now. We'll work our way toward the most important. Decorum is an issue right now. A lot of people have taken issue with this. How do you see the new rules of decorum being put into place?
Well, I'm interested to see how the rest of this conversation unfolds at City Council. As it sits right now, I don't know that I fully support the legislation that's before us for a number of reasons. And you know, the first thing that I think about when it comes to meetings and decorum is we already have rules that kind of outline behavior and how the meetings should run. What we really need is firm leadership to enforce those rules. I have concerns that applying additional rules isn't going to do anything if there's not someone strong enough there to enforce the rules that are already on the books. So for me, I think we need to have a conversation just around the meetings themselves and allowing the president of council to really dictate how that meeting is run and understanding that it's her meeting. She has the authority to enforce the rules that are already on the books, and I just think we need to start doing that.
She's been there for 2 years now, over 2 years. Why do you think this has not happened so far? Why this conversation has not happened?
I don't know what brought about this whole conversation around decorum. You know, we had a situation here maybe a month or two ago where there was a pretty loud shouting match after a council meeting between a citizen and a council member. I kind of feel like the discussion around decorum came after that interaction. I don't know if there's any truth to that. I wasn't involved in crafting the legislation, obviously, so I can't say I don't understand totally the why. But again, we have rules on the table already that kind of outline behavior and decorum for these meetings. I just think we need to do a better job as a council and as a council president of enforcing those rules.
Why do you think nobody has ever had a conversation with her? I mean, let's suppose that it does come from that conversation. It happened after the meeting, the shouting match. I understand. I missed that whole thing. But, you know, if somebody felt that the meeting was not being helmed properly, why not go to the president and say, hey, you know, this is not being handled very well?
Yeah, I mean, that's a conversation I'm willing to have. It's certainly something that as this continues to be talked about during council, you know, I'm going to get pretty vocal about and talk about. And kind of throw it back at the president, because she does have the authority to, you know, if she feels like a citizen is being unruly or not following the rules, she has every right to gavel that individual. You know, the chief of police is at every meeting. He acts as a sergeant of arms. We can certainly have people removed if they're going to become unruly. And that goes for city council and it goes for citizens. I certainly don't want to restrict people's ability to come and speak their mind. I have been swayed on issues before just listening to people get up and talk about them. So I definitely don't want to peel that back. I think having citizens engaged in this process is important, and we should encourage that, not try to limit that conversation.
Now, the other thing coming up, it's in front of council right now. I believe it's at its first reading at this point. Extending council terms to 4 years. They've been 2 years for a long time. This has been brought up with the reasoning that 2 years is not enough time to learn what's going on, and then you have to run a campaign to get reelected. What do you make of this?
I can understand that. You know, when we started talking very heavily 4 or 5 years ago about the need for a city charter, this is one of the reasons I was very supportive of a city charter. I would love to move to 4-year terms for city council. I would love to move to a staggered election so we don't have a complete changeover, which I don't know if that's ever happened in the history of Marion. I think it would be pretty rare for that to happen, but it could. So I understand the logic behind the legislation. I'd also like to take it one step further and remove political affiliation from city council. But I don't think anybody has the appetite for that right now.
Well, a lot of people have said one of the reasons that council was always left on a 2-year term was if you don't like the person and they are just representing your ward or the entire city as an at-large person, you can get rid of them. Every 2 years, you got the chance to get rid of them. 4 years is a little longer.
And you do have the mayor, who's always been on a four-year term. So there is somebody you would hope who had some experience that could help people along if need be.
Yeah, there's logic there. Is there a learning curve to the job of city council? There probably is, but I think it's going to be different for every individual. I can only speak from my experience. Was there a learning curve? Yeah, there certainly was. But I had experience with some boards, so I had at least a little bit of a knowledge of Robert's Rules of Order. I had been attending city council meetings before deciding to run, so I understood how the meetings ran. I understood some of the terminology. I think it's going to be different for every individual. So to say the reason we need four-year terms is because it's a learning curve, I think the learning curve for everybody is going to be different. Do I understand that? Yes, because there is a little bit of frustration. I can remember my, you know, first year on council. You get through that first year, and it's a bit of a whirlwind. And then, you know, just a few months after that, you've got to start running a campaign again for reelection. So I understand that. It's frustrating. So, I do support the four-year term for city council.
One more question about this. I think a lot of people are wondering, these things that are really not financial issues, but putting on the ballot the idea that council will get four-year terms, staggered terms, and the decorum issue are more just cosmetic changes to city council. And this council is making those rather early in their term. Why do you think these things are coming about with this particular council?
Well, you know, when we were talking about the city charter, one of the things when the charter was voted down that I kind of encouraged the Legislation and Codes Committee to do was to look at the things that were important about having a city charter, understand what items could go to referendum, and let's pursue it. So I don't know that Legislation and Codes necessarily heeded my advice there, but I kind of feel like they did in a way, because these were a lot of issues that were talked about during the charter conversation. So I kind of just feel like we're continuing that conversation, and we're picking off maybe a little bit of the low-hanging fruit that we could have accomplished through a charter just through the referendum process.
And it should be noted that, just so people don't get confused, the four-year term for city council members staggered would go to the voters.
Correct.
That's not a decision city council will make. They're just making the decision to send it to the voters this coming fall. Do you have any idea how you think the voters will react to this?
I don't. I think most people would understand it. I think most people would be supportive of it. I can't really think of a lot of reason to not be supportive of it. You know, you speak of, well, 4 years if you've got to get rid of somebody. There's a process for recall. So I don't know that would necessarily be a deal breaker there. So overall, I feel like if this went to referendum and the voters had a say, it would pass.
It's interesting because it's being done in a non-municipal year.
Yes.
So that's also, I think the timing of it is also something people have discussed.
Timing, I don't know if it's just, you know, we're kind of one election maybe removed from the whole charter discussion. I can't speak too much to the timing.
You're the head of the Finance Committee. Of course, the biggest discussion in Marion right now is still the finances. April 6th, we were told the plan was sent down to the state. As of Monday night, the mayor said that they've been here. They've been talking to people. They've been working with people, but there's no answer. What do you know as the head of the Finance Committee in regard to these meetings, in regard to what's been going on?
I know as much as the mayor has shared with us Monday night. That's essentially what I know.
Do you see that as a problem, being the head of the Finance Committee?
No, I don't. You know, we were certainly involved in the process of kind of getting it to the state. Been involved in a lot of conversations with the mayor and the administration on getting to this point. But really, the ball's in the state's court. So it's kind of just a waiting game at this point. Little frustrating, yes, because you don't know what you don't know. But I'm not really surprised either.
Well, as far as this goes, a lot of people, the question they're still asking, which is kind of odd because we all became aware of this late last year, October, November-ish, people are still saying, what happened? Where did the money go? How did Marion get in this type of trouble financially? What's the answer you give them when they ask you that?
Yeah, it's the same thing I've been talking about for 5 years. You have to reconcile the books. You have to have an audit cross the finish line. When you stop reconciling your books for 5 years, it would be like you not looking at your check register or pulling up your bank account online every other day just to see funds coming in and going out. Everybody does this. It's the way business is done. To neglect that for 5 years, you're going to have these types of problems, and that's exactly what we ran into.
Why did it seem as if administration and other members of council didn't see that coming? It wasn't that nobody saw it coming. Other people said things, but it was as if financially we're okay. Financially we're okay. We can do this. We can add this. We can do this. And then all of a sudden, it was almost as if one week there was a surprise. There was a budget prepared. And not only can we not pass this new budget, but we've got bigger problems.
Yeah. Well, I think the reason for that is I think there was a lot of excitement when we saw bank accounts reach levels of almost $17 million. There was excitement. We had some money in the coffers. There wasn't a lot of talk about, finances could really, really take a turn here. So when Schertzer left office, there was about $16 million in total in our various bank accounts, which was a really good financial position for the city to be in. The failure to reconcile books from the time, Schertzer was still in office when we stopped reconciling the books. But for that period of years, we didn't know how bad we were in the red because nobody was going back and doing the work to reconcile those books and close out every month.
Well, and I think this is one of the criticisms that has come the mayor's way, because when Mayor Schertzer left, one of the last things he said was, I cannot in good mind or good faith say that the raises that were voted on by council are a good idea and should go through with not being able to know what the financial situation is in Marion. I cannot do this. And he vetoed him at the last moment he could. And then Mayor Collins came in, and again, nothing wrong with this attitude, but said, he felt like it was Groundhog Day in Marion and nothing was ever changing, and started to spend some money. Now, not that he spent $9 million, but again, not knowing what your balance is, a lot of people feel that was not the greatest idea in the world at that time.
Yeah, hindsight's always 20/20, right? He also came into office thinking he had $16 million in the coffer, which is much more than Marion's had in any time in the recent past. This is part of a bigger story. When we look around, this isn't just a unique situation to Marion. Municipalities, counties, universities were given money hand over fist during COVID, and people spent. They spent recklessly, and we never went back and made any cuts. This isn't unique to Marion. Turn on the news. It's happening everywhere. It's a problem. We've got to get in front of it.
A lot of people are confused about the letter that came out in February. The mayor laid out a plan for what he wanted to do, and he wanted to raise storm sewer rates. He wanted to raise sanitation rates. He wanted to get rid of the out-of-city tax credit for people who work out of the city of Marion. He wanted to get rid of curbside recycling and raise the bus fares. Now, we found out, some of those things were done. Sanitation was done. Storm sewer was done. The out-of-city tax credit, that was amended to 50%, so that was taken care of in its own way. But we still don't really know what happened with curbside recycling. It's still happening, as far as anybody knows. And we just heard about bus fares being raised last Monday. Will be on the agenda for this coming Monday. But that was said to be a product of the gas prices going up, which didn't happen until the last month or two. So, I mean, it's confusing a lot of people as to why. I think people expected it to happen 2 months ago when it was a part of the plan. Do you have any idea what's going on with recycling or what the bus fares might be going up to?
Well, first of all, I think it's a little disingenuous to say that the bus fares need to raise because of gas prices. If you recall, I believe it was almost 2 years ago when Julie Welsh was the director of transit, she had actually come to council and requested additional fares. There was a study done by the state, the Department of Transportation through the state of Ohio, and they did come back and say that we should raise our fares, that we were out of line with other municipalities our size. And at that time, she had requested to do just that. Council, for whatever reason, didn't feel that that was an apropos time to do that and didn't do it at that time. So if we knew that fares needed to increase almost 2 years ago, to say that it's because gas prices today, I think, is a little disingenuous. Do the fares need to go up? Probably. Transit is running in the red. It is a service, however. This is a service that the city needs to provide. Does transit need to run in the black? Probably not. But there should be some type of self-sufficiency there, and I think that's kind of what we're after at this point.
Do we know what the fees are going up to? Or what people want them to go up to?
I do have that information. I don't have it with me. I could definitely.
Yeah, just give me an. Do you have an idea? Is it a doubling? Is it?
It's
a fraction.
I believe it's about double.
Double. Yeah. So, this is coming to committee. So, and there was some talk of this. So, this is something the mayor can't do unilaterally.
Correct.
So this will have to be voted on by council.
This will have to go through council.
And last time it did. That was the last council, but a lot of members still there. That failed. I don't think there was anybody who voted against it at that time. Do you think a different outcome will come now because of the financial situation?
I suspect so.
Yeah. The curbside recycling. What's the situation there? Do you have any idea what's happened with that?
I don't have a real good feel for that. It sounded like we were hot and heavy going to get rid of it. I don't know if there was some outrage from residents. I don't have a good feel for where curbside recycling sits today.
Did you feel that what the mayor said or wrote in his letter was sufficient to get us to where we need to be?
His letter to the state?
Yeah, his letter to the letter to the city, in which he said, this is what I think needs to be done to get us, this is the plan.
Well, and that was essentially what he sent to the state as well.
Yeah.
I think it was sufficient. The question is, does the state think it's sufficient? And I think we're going to know that here in the next week or two, hopefully.
What does it signify to you that the state is coming down here quite a bit and talking to the budget director and talking to people in the auditor's office, I guess, since the plan was sent?
Well, I think there's a couple different ways you could look at that. You could look at that a couple different ways. Maybe they need more information. Maybe they just want to get some more details. Maybe they don't think this plan is going to work at all, and they're trying to get involved to maybe help facilitate a third plan. So I don't know. I think you could look at it either way. I do know that with a fairly new auditor and a new treasurer, any help that we can get from the state is going to be welcomed. So.
Behind the scenes thing, it was talked about at one point that there was a rumor that the hospital wanted to buy the land where they are, get rid of the lease, which nets the city a fairly good amount of money every year. Do you know anything about that? Is that been talked about any further?
I know about as much as everybody else in the city knows. Sounds like there was discussion at a commissioner's meeting at one time. And that's kind of where that sits. I don't know what type of discussions have taken place between Ohio Health and the city and the county specifically, but I certainly would welcome those conversations.
Do you think there'll be any type of change with the rates, the rate increase at the Aquatic Center when they open in a few weeks?
I almost think there has to be. In fact, I thought I had saw proposed rate increases for the pool. I could be speaking out of line there.
No, I think they did. I think they raised them.
So yeah.
Do you think that will affect how many people go to the pool? Or is that just a weather thing? If it's hot, people will go no matter what the cost is.
I believe people are going to attend the pool. If you've gone on a hot summer day, that thing is usually plumb full of folks. So I don't imagine it's going to hurt attendance greatly.
What can be done at this point to help the finances of the city besides raising cost and eliminating programs?
Well, there's two ways to generate more money. You generate more revenue, which means taxes and fees go up, or you cut back on programs and services. There really is no other way around this. We can look for grants for certain projects or certain applications, but at the end of the day, we either have to look for ways to generate more revenue or we have to cut back on our expenditures. There is no other way to solve this problem.
One final question I want to get in. You were the lone no vote on Monday in regard to the Dollar General issue across from Logan Tire to suspend the rules. Even Scott Kreider, the Democrat, changed his vote in that particular circumstance. Why are you a no on that, and why is this a bad idea?
Yeah, so first of all, let me just come out and say right now that I fully support the residents over there and their request or need or desire for some additional groceries over there. Completely understand it, and I fully support it. I've been on council long enough to know that we need to take our time with these things. I've seen enough of these go through, get rushed through, and then 2-3 months later, we find out that there's a problem. I wanted to just show some restraint. Let's take this to 3 meetings. Let's talk about it. Let's hear the concerns from the citizens, because there are some. I do feel there's an environmental concern there. I don't know that that's been sufficiently addressed for me personally. The idea that, well, if there is an environmental issue, it goes back on the individual. I don't know that I buy that. We're talking about an estate as it is. I don't know the age of this woman, but if she were to pass away, we've annexed this property into the city. What happens now? Further, if it's her responsibility to clean it up, she's known about this since 2022. The EPA got involved back in 2022 on this property. I don't have a warm, fuzzy feeling that she's going to solve the problem. So I have concerns. Fully supportive of the need for nutrition over there, groceries. I get it. Let's get access. But this idea that no other business is going to come in there besides Dollar General, if you understand how business works, if a business thought they were going to be successful there, they would build there.
Well, and I think that's been one of the big discussions, honestly, is that, you know, to annex land and zone it commercial and go through all these processes that have to happen, I mean, all you have to do is look in the city of Marion and the county, which is just obviously just a hip, hop, skip, and a jump outside the city. You know, Delaware Avenue is not what it used to be, certainly in the heyday when the mall was booming. 95 is as big as it's ever been and bigger than it's, you know, as big as it's ever been, pretty much. North Main Street has grown bigger than downtown. Now, that certainly was not a thing years ago, but that's because people are shopping there. They needed a third Wendy's there. They needed a Taco Bell. People are going to those places. They're supporting them. So this idea that a business wouldn't want to put something in a commercial area in the third or fourth ward. I think that's why this is confusing, that we have to make it for this particular property, for this particular business, as if people would build over there for any other reason but money. You know, I don't think Dollar General's in the charity business.
No, that's the confusing thing. So the idea that we're being held hostage somehow by, well, the only people that want to build over there is Dollar General, what does that tell you? That tells me that it's maybe not a great business model over there. The other thing that I just want to mention, and I think I mentioned a few weeks ago, was that, you know, Logos Ministries over there does a free produce market. That's going to have to continue after the Dollar General is there, because Dollar General doesn't provide fresh produce. So if you want fresh, healthy food, Dollar General is not the answer. They can walk up to Five Point as it is today to the gas station or to the drive-thru and get Cheetos and Faygo. They're not going to get any produce options at a Dollar General. Go into a Dollar General. They don't offer that. So I understand the residents over there, their desire, their need for access. I just don't know that this is the right way to go about it.
I guess the final question, and it encompasses this, but it's an idea that seemingly has come to council in recent years, maybe the last 5 or 10, that it's the city's job to bring business to certain parts of the town. Certainly, I don't think the city touted North Main Street again, and look what's happened there. It's very big commerce-wise. Downtown, just for a lot of reasons, is not going to be what it once was, no matter how much you tout it down there, no matter who's building what down there. And apparently that must be the issue over in the third ward. If people think they can make money, they're going to go into those areas. Is it the city's business to be solving the commercial problems of people in neighborhoods?
No. Yeah. Our responsibility is to provide an environment where businesses can be successful. I view that as government's role. That should be the end of our role in terms of business. Let business do what business does. This wasn't the city doing all this work on North Main. This was the hard work of individuals who call themselves developers, who bought buildings and did the hard work of refurbishing them and working with the state. And those are the people that bring jobs to the town. It's not city government. City government needs to provide the environment for them to be successful. So when we do things like raise taxes or raise fees and don't improve services, we're not creating the environment for businesses to want to come here. That should be our role as city government. Allow the business people, the developers, the people with the know-how to bring the jobs to the community. Our job is just to make sure that they have an environment where they can be successful.
Mm. It's an interesting time, and right now, no economic development director.
There is none.
None. So, and somebody did ask me yesterday about the grass and I think Mr. Kreider brought it up Monday as well. And apparently right now that program is not funded because of the financial issues. So I guess do the best you can with what you got.
That's correct.
At this time.
If you're an able-bodied individual and you've got neighbors that have challenges, like I encourage folks on Monday night, grab the lawnmower, go out and help your neighbor out. Be a good neighbor. That's how we're going to be successful in Marion. People watching out for each other.
Thanks for coming on today, Aaron Rollins, City Councilman at Large, head of the Finance Committee, Monday night, 6:30. Check it out at City Hall. You'll learn something. Thanks, Aaron.
Thanks for having me, Scott.
All right. There's the interview with Aaron Rollins that we taped yesterday afternoon. City Councilman at Large and head of the Finance Committee. A lot of stuff talked about in that interview. His thoughts on putting rules for decorum in during meetings, extending council terms to 4 years, the thoughts on the Dollar General situation over across from Logan Tire, the finance situation here in Marion, bus fare increases, whole lot of stuff talked about in that interview. curbside recycling. The new councilman who was appointed on Monday for the 4th Ward, Nathan Stevenson, 29 years old. So a lot of stuff there. Phone lines are open, 46 minutes past the hour here, 740-383-9944. That's 740-383-9944. If you have anything to say about anything in that interview, feel free to give us a buzz. Here this morning, we would love to talk with you. It's interesting to see how this is all coming about. Will it all work out? I guess time will tell the story on a lot of that. And as we go on down the road, we'll see how it all shakes out in the end. You know, the city, I was telling somebody the other day that things going on in the city the last 2.5, 3 years have been fascinating in that you used to be able to not attend city council meetings, and 9 times out of 10, nothing happened of any significance that needed to be reported. But now, almost every week, something happens of some significant value. And a lot of times, it doesn't even have to do with policies. A lot of times, it's very well personality-driven, what's going on with council and the discussions down there. And maybe that's why we are where we are. I'm still confused about the whole issue with the Logan Tire situation in the 3rd Ward, because if Dollar General wanted to build over there, why are they so focused in on land that was not zoned commercial and was not in the city? I mean, there's got to be some land over there that somebody is willing to sell other than that land, which apparently has become controversial, that they could put this new Dollar General on. You think it would make it easier on the Dollar General that they could buy land that maybe wasn't suspected of being contaminated? I don't quite understand that. You know, when North Main Street was expanding, when Wendy's and Taco Bell were building their new stores, they had to buy homes, tear them down, and put up their restaurants. So I don't understand why that's something that can't happen in the 3rd Ward, but maybe we'll find out as time goes along. Go ahead, caller.
Good morning, Scott.
Good morning.
About Dollar General's going over there if it's not polluted. We all just might as well accept that. I don't understand what the obsession is with annexation, why they keep telling us it's so great, this, that, the other. I mean, I guess utilities would be the only thing they would need at this point. They've already gotten mutual aid and whatever else. But who cares about Dollar General? Let's talk about the drive-by.
Oh, yeah, last night. That was terrible.
It wasn't last night. It was yesterday in the middle of the day.
Well, yesterday in the
afternoon.
Yeah, yeah.
My son, my 16-year-old and I, he was driving. We were headed to McDonald's, and I own the building on the corner of Oak and Silver, and they're wrapping police caution tape around it. And I got out, and I went up and talked to one of the residents that was standing outside, and I was like, do you know what's going on? And they said, yeah, there was a shooting. I said, well, that happened the other night, didn't it? He said, no, it just happened. See the shell casings laying on the ground? I was like, what? He was like, yeah, the car, I mean, it just happened. He's like, we just came out of our houses. A 16-year-old was driving and got shot. They shot at, well, 3 houses were hit. So imagine sitting in your house and bullets just start flying through the walls. A 16-year-old was hit, drove himself to the hospital and was life-flighted to Columbus.
Well, it's interesting.
They arrested a 15-year-old.
Well, we were coming out to the studio yesterday, as a matter of fact, to tape that interview, and it must have been about 3 o'clock, and that's when the life flight was coming in.
Yeah, I listened to it all on the scanner. Then once the police started coming in hot and heavy, and like I was like, no one was... The guy drove off, so no one left in an ambulance. We didn't know. Myself and the bystanders didn't know at that point the person inside the vehicle had been hit. And they drove themselves to the hospital, and then there was a bunch of calls of erratic driving and things like that. It was a shot kid driving himself to the hospital, and then I listened to them life flight him. I listened to all of it after that, because they're like, are you sure we're not taking him to children's? No, he's on the cusp is what they said, so I'm assuming that meant he's the size of an adult. And they said we're taking him to Grant instead. I mean, I listened to him talk about the wind and everything else, but what I also listened to during that was that there were two domestic calls for Marion City Police Department that they were not able to handle because everybody was tied up down here at the police station, or at the shooting, at the police station, it's right down the street from me. Everybody's tied up down here at the shooting. For the record, I want to say this happened around the corner from me. It's about the same distance where this Dollar General is going in. So if I shouldn't be concerned about the Dollar General, I probably shouldn't be concerned about this shooting either, right, since it's not my neighborhood. I also, my son and I, speaking of mowing, this is all tying in together. My son and I volunteered to go down and mow a vacant house 150 feet away from where this shooting happened just the day before as our good deed out loving our city, because the house is vacant and the grass will be above our head by the end of summer. But so if I shouldn't care about that part of the neighborhood, I probably shouldn't go down there and help those people out and mow either, Bill Collins. But Marion City Police Department wasn't able to take two calls, and they actually even said, can the sheriff help out? And they said the sheriff is already helping us on other calls. So yesterday we already saw the effect of being down police officers. Two domestic calls had to wait. I don't know if they were domestic violence or whatever, but two calls for domestic assistance had to wait because of a drive-by shooting 1,500 feet away from City Hall.
Well, and I think this is no surprise that when you're down eight officers and five firefighters, that this is going to be a problem.
That's already a problem.
Well, yeah, I mean, I don't know how you get around it. I mean, I think that the police chief and the fire chief certainly see it as a problem. I don't think they like what's going on.
Well, the same breath there, all right, the police chief and one of his lieutenants were out doing, I'm not saying don't honor fallen police officers because they gave their lives in the line of duty. They deserve to be honored. But our police department is strapped for resources. I think we can agree on that. We're down eight officers, and we don't know what the state of Ohio is going to do with our budget. Our chief of police and one of his lieutenants and a canine unit, two separate vehicles, driving around the state of Ohio, driving to London, Ohio, and doing the tour of Ohio for these fallen officers in one day. When Jay McDonald leaves Marion, we pay a major to act as police chief that day. So we are paying two police chiefs that day. We also have a lieutenant who is not, we're down eight officers. We need all hands on deck. We have a canine officer. He has a canine dog. When we call for a canine, we have two. And if one's busy, he's down in London, Ohio with the other one. Okay, if we have resources for them to drive around Ohio in two vehicles on our fuel, on our payroll, but we don't have resources for officers to answer calls?
Well, it's my understanding that the issue with the officers is not about resources. The issue, the eight people who left were because of financial insecurity.
I want to hear all eight people that left, because one of them was a retirement that was announced. That's Fitzko. He announced he's retiring. He's not gone yet. He's still there. He's still working. The last I knew, unless he left early, he was due to leave in the summer, was when his retirement was up. One of the officers has been indicted for rape. He is still on the payroll. I don't believe he's being paid, but he's still considered a police officer, and he's not working. So now we're down to six officers. Did all six of those officers actually leave for better jobs, or were there vacancies before now? Because I don't think we were fully staffed before, at the beginning of the year. Weren't we already down officers just because attrition, like they had left or retired or whatever?
I think there were a few, but, you know, I don't really...
So I'm not sure that everybody is abandoning ship the way they're making it sound. I'm not saying that some of them didn't, but some of those numbers, I'm not sure one of them to percentage. Everybody just like, okay, we're dipping. The firefighters concern me. We got two firefighters running an entire fire station. Think about that.
Well, I don't know if that's...
If an ambulance shows up with one person and it's got, who keeps you from bleeding while the other one drives?
Well, that's what I'm saying. If I were trying to present that story as this is our problem, I don't know that the way I would present that would be,
hey, people just don't want to work here because they hear that the city has financial problems and they're afraid to lose their job. That's probably not the best PR thing to say. I mean, it might be the better thing.
We will never hire anyone campaign.
Well, right, but that's what I think you would go, if it truly were because people have just retired or we do have this isolated incident with a police officer who's being paid, who's been charged with something, I think
I
you would rather...
I don't know if he's being paid. I'm not going to say that because I don't want to incense people, but I do know that he is still considered an employee.
Okay. Well, I thought you had said that he was paid, but...
No, he is part of that eight. I don't know if he's being paid. I have not asked for those records, but he is considered an employee. Like, his spot is being held. He has not resigned, and he has not been terminated.
Well, I think I would rather say that than say people just don't want to work here because of the financial situation.
People didn't want to work there before the financial situation. Our officer pool was empty before we announced that we didn't have any money. Remember BJ Gruber, we don't have anyone in our candidate pool, and it takes time to develop our candidate pool. So we didn't even have anyone sitting there waiting to be hired.
Well, yeah, I and that very well could be the case. I'm just saying that I don't know that my tact when announcing that I'm down eight officers or announcing that I'm down five firefighters would be to say that the optics of what's going on here are why we can't get people. That's going to make things optically worse if there's already a problem.
I'm not sure that the firefighters, I'll have to check on that one. I don't know if they've, like, if people have quit because of this. I think the firefighters have actually kind of, like, bonded together and decided they're going to ride this one out. Now, I'm not sure if anyone has left. I can't say that for sure. I don't think they've filled any spots is what I think has happened there. And reducing their manpower has to do with cutting back on overtime. So they were doing, you know, they were staffing with the same amount of firefighters they have, just some of them might be on straight time and some of them might be on overtime, and the overtime just isn't there anymore. So that's where they're staffing, and they are down men, I'm not saying, or people, they're down people, but they were able to cover some of those, the dual coverage with overtime, and now they're not using the overtime to do it.
Well,
like police officers, I know they are down bodies.
Well, like I said, I only know what the chief said.
Oh no, they're down. They have five openings. If they were fully staffed, they would have.
Right, but I mean, he did say
five more people.
When I said, "Why are you down five?" they said, "Because people are leaving because of the financial worry."
I thought that's what McDonald said. I didn't think that's what Dean said. I believe you. I just don't remember.
I thought that's what he... No, because he definitely said something about... because I said, well, why is this at the end? And I believe... Or something to the degree, is this because of the financial insecurity? And he said yes.
I thought you asked him if there was any plan for changing anything, and he said not that he knew of.
No, that was also at the end.
I don't know.
That was also at the end. Yeah.
But I blurring together, possibly.
Yeah. But no, I believe one of the end questions with him was also, is this because of the financial insecurity? And I believe he said yes.
Okay.
But, you know, again, if it truly had to do with retirements and
the fire department took their cuts. I think I read that their cuts totaled on their contract. They needed like $146,000 to meet their budget, and they ended up like with over $200,000 in concessions and cuts that they made. Fire department, really, we should be really grateful to them for what they do. And if they did leave for pay, I don't blame them because those guys make like less than $20 an hour.
Well, I don't think it's pay. I don't think it's pay. I think it's fear of being laid off. That's how it was couched to me. I don't think it's a pay issue.
If we lay any more firefighters off, we all better invest in hoses.
Well, okay, this is kind of tricky in a way. I don't think that the city is saying that they're going to lay anybody off or they had the intent to lay anybody off. I think what they're saying
the fear is that it could happen. Yes.
Yeah, the fear, because these people keep hearing that the city has no money, they thought, well, I could be laid off and I don't want to risk that, so I'm going to go look for a job at a place where that's not an issue. Not that it was an issue here, but it just didn't sound very good. And this comes back to optics, and this is why I always say, like I was saying yesterday with the water story, optics do matter. And people who muddy up, if people have proof that people are going to be laid off, if people have proof that the water's bad, if people have proof of any of this, that's one thing.
But I know they had a meeting, the police department had a meeting at the end of the year last year that they told people they were going to be laid off. Someone that was in that meeting told me it happened. They told me that it happened. I know it happened. Now they can say it didn't happen or whatever, but after this conversation you and I are having, I'm firing up my laptop right now, and I'm sending a record request and asking for the names of the people who resigned.
Well, and there you go, and I think that might tell a bit of the story. But I do think that, you know, I'm not sure what's going on right now. In to the degree, and we'll talk more about this next hour, I'm not sure what's going on, that clearly there are issues here, as Aaron was stating, in regard to everything we talked about. Clearly there are issues, but I think also there is a fear going on right now that hasn't necessarily been realized yet. And
right. Oh, I agree with that.
Right. But the fear is causing problems in a lot of places where I don't think people want those problems to be caused, in the fire department, in the police department,
mm-hmm.
in a lot of places. So, you know, I think at some point we do have to tamp down the fear until we get evidence that there are things like this going on. And once we get the evidence, then I think it's fair game to talk about it and say that it's going on. But there, you know, the fear part of this is really starting to take hold. And if it indeed did cause police officers to leave who were trained here, or firefighters to leave who were trained here, then that's a very, very, very big problem.
And if it didn't, shame on them for using it to pander.
Yes, and you shouldn't lie about that either if it's not true. Sure, absolutely, either way.
I'm not saying either way, but now I want to know.
Yep.
We're going to find out.
Well, we're going to take a break, and we'll come back and continue the conversation.
Bye, Scott.
All right, stay tuned. We'll be back right after this.
Of course, participate every year. And there was a commercial that I greeted him, that's true. Not only that, he knows me.
Yes, absolutely.
But I don't get